Okay, welcome everyone. This is Steve Ray, and this is the March 3rd session of the Ontology Summit, titled Making the Case for Ontology. On this session, we're actually going to be doing the first sort of piece of integration among the tracks. As you probably know, we have five tracks, and on today's session, we're going to bring together the first three of those tracks to start building a coherent picture and message for the ultimate deliverable of this summit. So today we're going to hear from Michael Gruninger representing Track 1, which is the Ontology Application Framework. And Michael's going to basically give us a quick overview of what they've put together. And I encourage you to follow the links on today's session page. The one dash Gruninger will take you to the wiki page. We're not doing slides today. We're actually going to be using the wiki pretty extensively. So he's going to give us a sort of walkthrough of the application framework which we are using, that he and his team have been building to classify the different kinds of applications that can use ontologies. Then Rex Brooks is going to come in representing track 3, which is the value metrics and value models track, to build on that and basically show how a framework for the applications themselves fits into a larger context where you now bring in the measures of benefits, which many of which, or at least some of which, can be measured, and hence the value metrics, which will quantify the benefits of various kinds, and also bring in the perspective of different kinds of audiences who will be looking at those kinds of metrics and benefits when deciding whether an ontological approach makes sense. And finally, Mike Bennett, representing Track 2, the documented case studies track, will be bringing to our attention a set of those cases which have articulated some of these benefits, and even better, some of them have articulated some of the metrics by which one can quantify those benefits. And all of these wiki pages, which are pointed to from today's session, are either already or soon to be cross-linked. So you can go from the places in the framework which identify different kinds of use cases. You can go from the use cases, let's say, to some of the value metric metrics identified on that page. So you should be able to navigate, and admittedly, we're not totally there yet, but those cross-links are being put in place as we speak. So that you can approach it from either of those three starting points. So that's kind of what we're going to do as far as the presentations, and then we're going to open it up to have people ask questions, offer opinions, more insights as to how this is starting to hang together. So with that, I don't want to delay things further. Michael, why don't you go ahead and take it away with the application framework and walk us through. And don't forget to unmute.
Can you hear me?
Yep, got you loud and clear.
Okay. Great. So Track 1 had its kickoff telecon approximately a month ago with panelists including myself, Mike Ushold, Leo Oberst, Alan Rector, together with some other input from Nicola Guarino. What I'll be presenting today is a synthesis of the material we presented on that day, as well as various inputs that people provided, particularly Steve Ray, to extend our framework and make it more robust, if you will. I want to begin with just a statement of the scope of what we are presenting. I think there may be some misconceptions as to the scope of the framework that we're presenting. If you read the very first paragraph, first statement on the wiki page, the application framework community input page, The framework that we're presenting here is really intended to provide a common terminology among all of the summit participants for describing the applications of the ontologies and the benefits that they deliver within those applications. So if you will, this is more of the techie perspective on the role that ontologies play within these applications. It's one of the discussions that we'll be having later on in this session will be how to bridge the technical description of these applications with the more intended audiences that to which we'll be trying to convince people that this is a very worthwhile set of technologies to apply. So the first kind of metaphor that people resonates with people is the notion of dimensions within the different kinds of properties, different roles that ontologies play. To some extent, these dimensions are a riff of the standard interrogative questions of who, what, when, where, why, and how. People have seen some of these, this story of approach applied in the Zappan framework. I think John Sola goes all the way back to Aristotle. So if you will, the first sort of dimension is functionality. So here the question is, how are the ontologies actually being used? This kind of abstracting away from some of the use cases that we've seen in two of the earlier sessions, we identified four major sorts of ways in which how ontologies are used. One is matching or mapping of concepts. A second is automated inference from some underlying set of axioms within the logic for the ontology. A third functionality deals with classification. And a fourth deals with using the ontology as a means of a specification, which then gets implemented in some other system. The second sort of dimension is related to architecture. Now, my threshold will be kind of following my little presentation here with some more kind of elaborations, places where I've maybe glossed over things. The notion of architecture was something that was near and dear in his presentation. The idea is, are we using the ontology within a single system, or is the ontology being used to connect or bridge multiple systems? The third dimension in our framework is, when are the ontologies being used within the application? Are they being used at design time, in which case it's kind of, you know, before the system is actually being deployed, or are the ontologies being used by a particular system at runtime? And as a footnote here, I'm using the word system, not restricted to software system, but just as a way of kind of talking about the kind of the integration between software and human, the socio-technical system, if you will. The next dimension, again, coming out of Mike Hushel's slide, is who is using the ontologies. Is it the ontology author? Is it the data author in terms of database design? Is it the application developer, or is it the application user? Or finally, there's this notion of a knowledge worker, often someone who's acquiring knowledge. The next dimension is what ontologies are being used. And so this follows some of the input from Neil Oberst and others with the semantic continuum. So it's not only the exact ontologies that are being used. So you can say, oh, I'm using, a friend of a friend ontology, or I'm using the following biomedical ontologies, but also the underlying languages that the ontologies are being specified in. This has input into things like automated inference. The next dimension, coming out of other input from the community, is why are the ontologies being used? So what is the underlying problem that is being addressed? What is the underlying problem that these ontologies are intended to provide a solution for? The next dimension is directly related to one of the other tracks in terms of benefits. So what is the impact of the ontologies on the underlying system? Coming out of last week's session, I believe, or 2 weeks ago, sorry, we saw that maybe you could look at the benefit in terms of the functional requirement, or the underlying requirement. So functional requirements of the system, meaning that the ontologies, the benefit of the ontology is to support new functionalities, new functional requirements within the system. A lot of the other benefits that we saw 2 weeks ago were more using the ontologies to support what, again, in a software perspective, is the non-functional requirements. Quality, performance, costs, maintenance, reliability, scalability, robustness, usability, extensibility. Now, each of these, again, coming out of the software community, there are various value metrics that people have used for evaluating the benefits that are associated with these. And to some extent, we see the role that the framework is playing is to say, well, if this is how the original system was evaluating these various kinds of requirements, then we will evaluate the benefit of ontology by comparing the ontology-free values of these metrics together with the ontology-augmented system and compare them to show that there is some kind of an improvement. So that's, again, more left the dimensions that we've identified so far. This is not a complete list. Hopefully now that we have this up on the input page, we've already seen a lot of discussion in the past couple of days on perhaps additional dimensions. I believe Mike Eschholt might be identifying a couple more. He was thinking of a role in ontology, so I'll leave that for him. I just want to conclude with kind of an initial classification of the ontology applications. So this is a level of aggregation that's a couple of levels above, say, the case studies we've seen so far, but the case studies have kind of fed into this sort of classification. So the first initial kind of class of applications we've been considering are related to integration. So you can think of integration as, in terms of the functionality, this is dealing with the matching and mapping of concepts. With respect to architecture, this is using the ontologies within multiple systems. The ontologies are used at runtime to provide a lot of these mappings. Who is using the ontologies? Primarily, we're looking here at application developers. And the problem being addressed, the non-functional requirements being related here to interoperability. So under integration, we have information integration, database integration, software interoperability, and software access. One of the things we didn't actually get a chance to do in time was to actually link each of these kind of specializations of integration with the actual use cases that we've seen so far, but that we can be doing that just in the next few days. The second major classification is decision support. So in this case, the main functionality is automated inference. It is, in terms of architecture, this is being applied to a single system. Again, the ontologies are being used at runtime. Typically, the people who are using ontologies for decision support are going to be either application users or knowledge workers. And usually, decision support is providing new functionality, something that existing systems cannot really provide. The next dimension is semantic augmentation. So the idea here is you have an existing system which did not have ontologies, and you are adding ontologies and, again, getting new benefits here. The functionality in this case is, again, more along the lines of specification. The architectures typically, although not necessarily, apply to single systems. The people who are using the ontologies in this case are going to be knowledge workers or application developers primarily. And the benefits are kind of a mix of functional and non-functional requirements. So you see things here like ontology-based algorithms or ontology embedded into software in generating Java classes, if you will. Model-driven design, where you design a particular artifact using the ontology, and then it can get, say, ported into other various software architectures, and then find ontology-based standards. The final major classification is knowledge management. This is under the functionality of classification. The architecture here, again, is primarily used within a single system, although not necessarily. Ontologies in this case are used at design time, and knowledge workers are the primary people using these ontologies. And in terms of the benefits, it's again a mix of new functional requirements together with improving other metrics with respect to non-functional requirements, primarily related to categorization. So that just concludes kind of an overview of this work, and see, this is really, say, the first phase of synthesis. And so hopefully now that it's on the wiki page, people can be editing it and adding it to it. Mike Eschholt, if you are on the line, I believe you are, if you wanted to add some new material, you have in the past couple of days been looking at kind of formalizing this a little more in terms of an ontology framework. So Mike, if you want to, you can take it away at this point.
Michael Groninger, while I'm waiting here, I will say that you mentioned verbally, orally, the answers to some of those first questions you had laid out, like the dimensions, like what category of application it is, who's the user, etc., what ontologies are being used. That would be great to put that on your wiki page as well, eventually.
So exactly. It's just like a little lack of coordination between my threshold and I in terms of who was going to be editing what and when. But that will definitely be up by the end of today.
Another logistics thing, Michael, you might want to think about, which I realized the use case team already did, is they actually started populating the synthesis page rather than the community input page. And it's great. You got this stuff on the community input side. Eventually, you're going to probably move or recreate some of this on the synthesis page for your track. And I would encourage the other tracks to do the same thing. Okay,
and I'd just like to draw people's attention to the chat room. Michael Oswald has provided a URL there. If people could click on that, I believe that he's going to be using that as the reference point for his comments.
Okay.
So this is Mike.
Oh, hi, Mike. Okay, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, so I just put a link in the chat. If people can see that. And it's a link to a file, to a folder which has several other files in it. And I want to call attention to, for the moment, the PDF. So there's two PDFs. The main PDF is called Ontology Application Framework.pdf. In fact, I suppose I can put that right in the, to make it easier for you. So if people can click on that link, then I can talk you through what we have here. So what I essentially did was I took the stuff that in the first half of what Michael talked about, and then I augmented it a bit. And so essentially I wanted to, because there's so many different factors that are kind of overlapping and partly distinct and partly almost the same thing. I wanted to just kind of draw a picture and get clear on this. So the fundamental thing, can most people kind of see what I'm talking about? If you can't, I suppose start chatting away and hopefully you're all looking at this diagram. So the core thing is an ontology application, which is simply any application that has or uses an ontology in some significant way. Now, typically, this will be a computer application, but not necessarily. An application of an ontology could be just to get everybody on the same page in an enterprise. So this is a point that Nicola pointed out in a message yesterday. Just conceptual modeling is a very useful thing to get people on the same page, even if it's not going to have a computational use after the fact. So fundamental to every application of an ontology is kind of like a threesome. There's the ontology itself that's getting applied. It's getting applied in a particular role, okay? And then there's the ontology application itself. So it's kind of like a ternary relationship, so we can reify that. So I created something I'm calling an applied ontology role. And again, these names are, I just kind of made them up. Some have better names. I'm happy to take them into account. So an applied ontology role is basically indicates that some ontology is playing an ontology role in some particular ontology application. And this seems to be where all the interesting meat is and some of the things that Michael talked about. So for an applied, a given application, the reason I separated this out is a given application can have more than one ontology and that ontology can be used in more than one different way. And each of those different uses and how it's used might apply to different stakeholders and might give rise to different benefits. So that's why I separated that out. So an application can be using ontologies in a different way or more than one ontology. So what is it about using an ontology in an application? That's what we have here. Well, why would you do that? So the intended benefit is one thing. So that's like the value proposition. And this is where we can link into the value metrics people. So there's the benefit that you intended to happen, but that might not actually have happened. So that particular use of the ontology in that context might not have given that benefit. So I separated out intended benefit from actual benefit. Then the thing that Michael had talked about a minute ago, the kind of user. So I'm calling that the ontology actor, the ontology author, the data author, application developer, etc. There is a version of this diagram which has some highlighted notes indicating you know, what the notations mean. The gray ovals are essentially instances of classes. This is actually a little tool that we built at Semantic Arts for, and it exports an OWL ontology, so it's a handy way to draw pictures and get the OWL out at the end. So there's a kind of user that's involved, and that could be one or more. There's a technique that's deployed. So it may use, for example, the hub and spokes architecture, or it may be semantic markup so that you know, for natural language processing. So there are a number of techniques that are out there that we use that, you know, ontology deploys. And I think it's useful to track those techniques. If you want to make the case for using ontology, we need to say, well, this particular technique is what gave rise to this benefit. And this benefit here, kind of a high-level benefit, is what gave rise to this other benefit over there. And that's going to help make it easier to make the case for people, the stakeholders, who we want to have see value. So that brings me to, then there's the role of the ontology. This is another critically important piece. So the role of the ontology, and again, this is a whole big thing, and in a way it's the second part of Michael's talk, the classifications of the different systems. Like, what is the ontology actually doing? How is the ontology used in that application? Okay? And I haven't started to list those out because, frankly, there's so many different ways to look at it. There's so many ways to carve up different aspects of it that I'm not sure the best way to do it. And eventually we'll just pick one and see where it goes. As far as benefits go, benefit is goodness, but it doesn't mean it's a metric. If you do have a benefit, you'd like to have a value metric. So therefore, I've added value metrics, and they're linked to benefits. So value metric is there, and it's there to measure, you know, the existence in some way of a particular benefit. And then there's also impacted stakeholders. So that applies to the benefit. So a benefit isn't just a benefit in the blue. A benefit always has someone that benefits, okay? So for the moment, I'm modeling, you know, who the benefactor is as a role. In other words, someone's job function, the CEO or maybe these ontology actors. Alan Ruttenberg raised the point, well, these things are really classes, aren't they? And I've modeled them as instances. And yes, in the real world, they are classes. And this is just a modeling decision that I made for the moment, and we can change it later if we need to. So that's a pretty quick summary of what I've got so far. There's things that still need to happen. On the upper right, there's a few notes, little to-dos to myself. So the technologies and approaches, they need to be fleshed out a little bit. For example, and there's lots of overlap, right? So the idea of using ontology-driven forms for user interface, what is that? Well, it's a technique. That's very nice. We can do that. It's also maybe an ontology role. It's the role of the ontology. So I'm not sure how to disentangle these things just at this particular moment. And also architecture. I didn't put architecture in here, but probably it should be. I think it's just an omission, accidental. So there's a variety of different architectures, the hub and spokes architecture. There's, you know, ontology given this and that and everything else. So there's lots of different architectures and variations that I wrote about years ago with Jesper and myself in that paper, and we could bring those on board here too. So that's that. Now, if you go to the other picture, it's called the Benefits and Techniques PDF. Okay, so what this is a little graph. I'm hoping that you're with me now. This little graph, and on the right-hand side, there's two ultimate benefits. One is, you know, more functionality. Well, that's a benefit. If you can get more functionality because you have an ontology than you could if you didn't, then presumably that's a good benefit. Another high-level benefit is reduced cost. What I like to do is tease that out a little bit and tell a story and say, well, okay, that's nice. How did you get more functionality? Well, let's back up a little bit. Well, actually, we got more functionality because we're more agile and we're more flexible. So that means we can do things much more quickly that wouldn't have been possible to do before. Another possible way you can get more functionality is simply by, say, adding a new technology like ontology reasoning. Now you can do things that you couldn't do before. So this benefits, you know, are facilitated by or helped to cause, you know, by other techniques. Techniques help achieve benefits, and other benefits can help achieve benefits. So, for example, reduced costs. Where do you get reduced costs from? Well, one way you get reduced costs is to have reduced maintenance effort. But that is itself a benefit. So reduced maintenance effort facilitates reduced costs. Faster development times also reduces costs. Well, how do you get faster development times? Well, let's say you use ontology-driven software engineering process, so you're not doing much code, you're doing mostly modeling. Well, that could be a way that you get faster development times. So I'm not going to go through every single link here, but the idea is to have a link here which says, you know, one benefit or a technique facilitates or helps to bring about, you know, another benefit. And this, I hope, can be used as input to the value metrics team, but hopefully.
Uh-oh. Can anyone hear me?
Yeah, I think we lost Mike.
I think we did. We better tell him on the chat here. Hold on.
I believe he was almost done, though.
Yeah, he was. In fact, I don't know, maybe while I'm waiting for Mike to get back on, let me just type him a quick message. But otherwise, John Soa, if you want to do *3, if you had a quick question, we can go ahead and entertain that.
Okay. Well, my quick question is just, I'm imagining myself as a project manager at a company that a few years ago saw Google Maps and said, wow, that technology is great. That technology is called Ajax. That technology could do a lot of good for us, and let's adopt it. And some of the people in my department all got busy, learned the Ajax techniques, and within 6 months' time, they started writing huge numbers of programs, and they were fantastic. Now, none of the things in those diagrams with all that huge amount of meta-level of this benefit causes that benefit causes that benefit causes... You know, if I were a project manager, I wouldn't believe any of that stuff. I would just say, hey, look at the program. I looked at that stuff that my guys delivered, and it was fantastic, and I didn't have to evaluate any of these kinds of meta level of benefit versus cost versus who did what to what. You know, it would not impress me at all.
Hmm. Well, let's see, Michael Groninger, do you want to touch base on that? Or actually, you know what, that might be a useful comment also to keep in mind when Rex is talking on the value metrics and the benefits. But
no.
It's only a debatable topic, I can imagine, depending on who the audience is.
Yeah, well, I think that is, you know, before we sell all this stuff, this stuff is far more complex than the subject matter of ontology, this huge amount of meta-level stuff. And It wouldn't convince me as if I were a program developer, project manager, it would frighten me rather than soothe me.
Mm-hmm. That is a valid point.
I can understand that. I think that I think this stuff may be more for us than it is for a potential audience. But my section deals with audiences a little bit more than we have so far.
Okay.
Yeah. So if I could maybe just address 2 points there. So the first point is the nature of this framework. So Mike has elaborated it to several lower levels of detail. The overall framework is mainly for us to classify in a way, just organize all the different use cases that people have been presenting. So that we kind of bring some order to all of that chaos, try to identify commonalities, try to identify when applications are comparable, identifying benchmarks, et cetera. So, you know, that's kind of the scope. We have a fairly narrow scope here. The second point is following on Rex and Steve's comment, is that there's also this notion of who is the intended audience for this framework. there are a lot of people that I've talked to that actually, if they think something's vaporware, they think something's just a buzzword, then they're going to ask questions like, okay, well, how did this, you know, make some kind of benefit? They show me, did it reduce cost? Well, how did it reduce cost? So there are a lot of people that really want to see some detail when they're very skeptical. And
yeah,
that's going to be addressed. You know, so I think that'll be addressed later on in the discussion for the intended audience.
The example I would use is Ajax, which took off like a rocket compared to Ontology. And people, the cost-benefit was obvious. They saw these applications, and they worked. And
I actually, John, from my perspective, this is Steve Ray, I think many of the people using Google Maps, for example, and Google don't even know about Ajax. So if they're a business executive type, they wouldn't even want to go that deep. But
yeah, right. Well, that's another point. But none of those people would be impressed by all these diagrams. The person I was thinking about is the project manager who is managing a team of developers and people who really do know what Ajax is, at least at a vague level, and want to learn more. But this, would they be convinced by this?
Okay, well, that's a valid point. I think we are trying to be pretty inclusive here in terms of providing material for a variety of audiences. So, you make a valid point. Let's see. Is Mike Ushel back on the line yet?
Yes, I am back. I have no idea how long I was gone for. I just noticed that the phone was down.
Yeah, you were actually pretty well through it. You had taken us through the benefits and metrics, the second diagram.
Okay.
If you wanted to make any concluding remarks, and then we can move on to Rex's talk.
Okay, so I'll just make it real quick. Essentially, I'm just right now puzzling over the overlaps between things. Like the ontology role is very tightly wound up with an architecture, whereas at some points they seem different, but they seem quite tightly linked together. And also you can say, I'm going to use the ontology for this purpose, and you might think the purpose is a link to the benefit, but you might actually successfully achieve the architectural intent and use the ontology just the way you thought you were going to use it, but it might not have ended up being any real value there. So I'm just puzzling over how to distinguish all that. That's pretty much it.
Okay, I can see where John is coming from. Ontologists do like to make ontologies, so we're doing ontology.
Well, I didn't hear what John said.
He was making a point that maybe we're getting a little carried away ontologizing all of this stuff where some of the audience members, I'm paraphrasing for John, some of the audience members aren't really going to care about all this meta-level modeling of the stuff we're talking about here, keep it real kind of thing. But it's and my response to him at the time was that is, I think, a very valid point for certain audiences. Other audiences, perhaps software team leaders or something, will want some of these things, and we're trying to be inclusive at this point.
From the point of view of a software team leader, and the example that I was giving is Ajax. The Ajax, now when Google Maps came out and Ajax started becoming popular, I was thinking of a project team leader who suggested to one of his guys, saying, why don't you try doing something with this? They saw a little program, and they said, wow, that's fantastic. And none of this meta level stuff would be convincing to that person at all.
Okay.
Then
it would
be wise not to show it.
I
would want to look at it.
Okay, let's not get bogged down in this right now. We'll have some time at the end for more discussion. I want to make sure we get our the track champions a chance to give their talk. Rex, are you audible?
Can you hear me?
I can. This is good. Okay, why don't you now build on this application framework with the value metrics and audience.
Okay, Michael, if you could go to the community input page for value metrics. Peter, if you could go there.
Oh, on the VNC.
Right. The easiest way is to go to 2001 and then drop down in the middle of the page.
Where do you want it to go? To the Value Metrics Community Input page?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. And if you can scroll down so you see the top of the graphic. Okay. we put the, we don't need to see the whole graphic. We just need to see the top. Because I need to, I want people to see the top of the page as well. Yeah. All I need is the column. Okay. If we go down one more, I want to be able to tie it together. Scroll down just a little bit. No. Scroll up. Scroll up. There we go. Just had it right. Excuse me. I want to get more of the text at the top of the page. All I need is the top of the columns for people to understand what I'm talking about.
You want the problem solution metric matrix title, right?
I want text at the top of the page as well as the top column headings.
Right. So it'll start with collecting use cases.
There you go. Start there first, okay? The point that needs to be made is that this is a snapshot. What we're putting together is a collection of use cases, but they're not full use cases. That's Track 2's responsibility. What we wanted to do is we wanted to have a quick snapshot where you can see the use case, the problem it addressed, the solution, the proposed solution or the solution that was used, metrics needed to measure the success of the solution, and then what the intended audience is and how you can reach them, and then if there's more that needs to be learned, then you can pick up out of this other few columns. So it's not an extended or extensive use case. What we basically want to do is we want to get the problem solution metrics matrix in front of people so they can look at various use cases and quickly look at what the problem is, what kind of solution it was, whether or not the solution used ontologies or an ontology, and then what the metrics are so we can get a feeling for the kinds of metrics that actually are being used. And I put in one, now you can scroll down a little bit. I put in one sample so people would understand what we're talking about. And you can add your own, and there are instructions. That first test questionnaire underlined thing takes you down to a set of instructions for how to add one. And we really want people to add these in. Because I have a few that I can add, and we're going to be taking as many as we can and compiling all of this and putting it out in a PDF at the end. What we want is the use case name and then a category from the ontology application framework if possible. And this first one was a top-tier IT provider working for an automotive aftermarket retailer, and they're doing an integration project. And the reason for it, the problem was that there was eroding customer loyalty, there was an aging technology that requires the retailer to improve the shopping experience. So this is a CRM, in essence. And so then I give the solution, which did not specifically include an ontology, but I mentioned in the last column that an ontology is inherent in part of that. The metrics are very clear. There was a 3-year conventional ROI. They were able to get faster checkout through the retail outlet. They had reduced costs overall. They were able to complete the project in 12 months. And the qualitative metric, which they did not give specifics for how they measured this, was improved customer loyalty. I'm assuming that they got a third party to do a survey. Because if you do it yourself, then your metric is on a qualitative basis where you're looking for subjective values. You're probably not going to be able to have any validity, or very little. And then the intended audience for this were the customers of the automotive aftermarket retailer, the management specifically of the retailer, and then all retailers' management, because the use of this, the purpose of the use case where they actually documented this was to sell their product to other retailers. Okay, so that's the audience. And that's not, software engineers, and that's not ontologists. These are the people that are the end users for the most part, or the decision makers. And these are things that were discussed in the audiences that have been talked about on the list as well. And in the last column, what more needs to be learned from this case, I said that, there is, in fact, some semantic consistency in the open standard terminologies that were used as well as the platform that was used. we can't actually cite them as being part of the reason for the success, but we can say that that was part of it. So, like I said, you can go down and to the actual section, you can click on it, and it will take you there to how you can do that. Now, one of the things that we wanted to if you click on that, it takes you down and it gives you the instructions for going to edit the page, copying and pasting the entire questionnaire into the bottom of the page, and then filling it out while you do that. If we go back up to the top of the page, we wanted to connect this to not only just the metrics that we talked about in our session, but we want to talk about metrics that were mentioned in the ontology application framework. So I specifically called those out up at the top of the page. The purple number is 20ML. Yes, okay. And you scroll down from there, the actual specific metrics that were mentioned in the ontology application framework. They didn't give, in this particular case, they didn't specify how to quantify these. Some are quantitative measurements like performance and maintenance and cost, and to a certain extent, scalability, reliability, yes, is also quantitative. But things like robustness and extensibility are somewhat subjective. So you have to, in other cases, try to be a little more specific if you can, or else say that you can't be specific. That being the case, if you go to 20MB, or M, I can't read it on my screen. Okay, yeah, I want to show how we're connecting. Go up one more screen. I want to show how we're connecting to the application type. I also have, if you need to check your application type to see what it is in the first column, there are links here to take you to those pages, or to those sections on the ontology application framework page. And then in the next section, connecting to the full Track 2 case studies, we give links to connecting to those specific ones there on the synthesis page, not on the community input page. And someone has been kind enough to provide more information on how those are actually put together. And I want to thank whoever did that for me, because that it gives you more information on what to look for when you're switching over to those, because those give you a much more complete understanding of a case study rather than a snapshot of a use case. And this begins to tie together the first three areas of the first three tracks that we've been working on. Now, it also will apply to others. And the main thing that I would like to get across to people today is that if you have a use case that you can help us with, the more we have, the more validity our work is going to have, because we'll be able to put those snapshots together and draw conclusions based on how many times, for instance, a particular kind of metric is used or is cited. And where possible, if you could use real ones, that would be best. But if you have something that's in the works or a problem that is bothering you that you want to deal with, or that somebody's asked you to make a bid on, feel free to do that. I would keep the names of the specific companies out of it if possible, unless they're willing to go along with it. And so at this point, we can go for discussion.
Let's go ahead and let Mike Bennett build on what you said and take us through the third set of pages, basically the use cases, and show how they link back in to the both the application framework and the value metrics case. So, Mike, are you on the line?
I believe so. Can you hear me well?
I can hear you loud and clear. So go ahead and give us your perspective, if you would.
Okay. So on the application cases synthesis page, I haven't checked what the VNC is showing. Yes, good, there we are. What we've done, when we initially got people to put in case studies, we asked them to try and provide us a grid or similar with a summary of what was the challenge that the ontology sets out to address, what kind of solution they provided, along with a kind of a, either a summary of key features or a screenshot or something to give more of a flavor of it, and finally what the benefits were. So what we were doing there was really anticipating two things. In terms of the kind of solution, we wanted to break out of any assumptions of, you know, an ontology being an OWL thing or a linked data thing or a search thing or a conceptual model or whatever, but actually say explicitly which of those kinds of things it was in anticipation of the Track One framework, which is now in place, which gives us a more rigorous way of describing that. And similarly on the benefits, we wanted them to try and tell us in their own words what sort of benefits there were and, if possible, how those were measured or demonstrated, whether they were explicitly or implicitly detectable and so on. Again, in anticipation of the framework we now have for from Track 3 on the metrics. So what this page is at the moment, it's very much a rough summary of what the case studies gave us in their own words. Now, those of you that did case studies, please do go in and check that I haven't misrepresented. In some cases, I had to extract things from a number of individual slides, and I don't know how successfully I got the flavor of some of these. Also, in some of the presentations, there were actually a number of case studies within one set of slides, and there's still a few that I haven't extracted, so please do feel free to either add those or prompt me to dig those out. But I've tried to include at least something from each of the presentations that we've had in the use case track. So I think in summary, what we've done is we've managed to, in our case studies, get quite a range of different kinds of thing that people mean by ontology, which is very much what we were after. And in some cases, we have managed to get some quite good descriptions of the benefits that came out of those. So what I haven't done here, and which we're now in a position to do, is to expand the solution into the framework and expand the benefits into the metrics. So that's not here at the moment in the sections that you're looking at, but that is kind of the next step, I think. But hopefully in laying this out on this page, we've managed to give some kind of flavor. Now, I don't know if there's any benefit in me going through each of these and summarizing any of that, or I think that might perhaps distract us and take us into the weeds slightly. Is there any benefit in that? Do you want to try?
I agree with you. I think what you've done, though, is a great framework in its own mind, in its own right, of laying out how we can start describing these use cases, which I think will be tremendous value. And I do observe that we're still having difficulty, and this is no big surprise, I guess, getting from the benefits articulation to the metrics, the actual measurable things, even though, of course, that's what many of the key decision makers always want, is ways of measuring return on investment in one way or another. But nevertheless, I think this is great. Now we've got a great foundation, if you like, for others, including, let's not forget, Track 4, which is the strategies for making the case. Now we've got this grist of the use cases fitting in a framework with some articulated value metrics in existence. So what I think I will do now is start opening the floor for people to react, comment. I'll do my best to monitor the hand-raising tool, so that's the way we can keep ourselves organized here. So if anyone wants to either raise a question or reiterate something they've written on the chat, I would also encourage you, even if you raise a question or a comment on the phone, try and capture it in synthesized form on the chat, because then other people who come back later to review these will be able to easily find your comment. So, Michael Groninger, you have your hand up.
Yeah, so I'd just like to say, so I didn't do my homework and didn't look at Mike Bennett's page earlier than this. I think what we were calling purpose of the ontology in the framework, I think it's synonymous with challenges in Mike Bennett's slide. I think, Mike, your term's better. Calling it challenges instead of purpose, I think maybe captures what we're trying to say there better. So I'll modify the framework for that. And then just one other general question would be, so how would you think we can kind of proceed in terms of kind of combining what's in the framework, how the framework's being used with how you're using it within the classifying the use cases? Because there are some things that, you know, people can have discussions over. So, for example, when you're talking about key ontology features, key ontology features, say, for from Sandpiper. So it's a key ontology features, complex multi-entity ontology, lots of restriction axioms. So that kind of feels like it's in the what ontology is being used. So we could maybe kind of elaborate the term what ontologies are being used with kind of key ontology features. But I guess one of the things we have to grasp that way.
I totally agree. I think with the initial grids, we had like a diagram there, and so there's a bit of overlap, a bit of vagueness at the moment between the description of the solution and the key ontology features. And I think the opportunity there to really tie that down a lot better than I've succeeded in doing so far. So I completely agree with your suggestion there.
Yeah, so I think we can, I've seen this now, I see how we could kind of tweak some of the terminology and the framework. I suppose we could just kind of do another iteration of this, and maybe we can slowly reach a fixed point. That might be one possibility.
Yes, I think what I'd maybe should try and do, either under key features or a better heading, is to articulate the terms in the framework, you know, in terms of what kind of thing it is. And then that would be separate from, say, the more verbal summary of the solution, which is more unique to each one. That might be a good way of putting the two together and making use of that heading.
Hmm. Okay, so one thing I'll do is I'll try to do another, like, say, revision of the framework and incorporating the different categories that you have, and then we can see how close we are after that next iteration. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, and then I can go through and update that section for each case study with the formal terms in the framework, and then we start to be in a position to cross-link a bit more explicitly.
Excellent. Good.
Okay. Mike Bennett, I had a quick question on the chat, and then I'll let John speak. Do you have any initial observations about coverage? In other words, are most of the use cases in one category or another, or are they pretty much covering all of the categories that Michael Groeniger had laid out?
That's a very good question. I think the first time round I was too busy panicking to even read most of them. The second time round, as I've gone through, I was actually quite impressed with the breadth of coverage we do already have. I'd have to read them the third time to really answer that definitively. But I do think that looking at what we've got some use cases which, you know, demonstrate a good reuse of reprontology material. We've got some use cases that, you know, relate to empowering applications for CRM and things like that. We've got some that are explicitly conceptual domain modeling. So my gut feel is I think we do have quite good coverage, but I'm looking forward to picking through it and seeing where the gaps are.
Okay, and as I say, even if there are clusters, that is telling as well, perhaps. So, okay, John, you want to chime in?
When I'm looking at any kind of evaluation, the thing that really impresses me is not the summaries and the statistics, but rather the actual case studies. I always want to, if somebody says, okay, here's a whole bunch of data and examples and numbers and a matrix of pluses and minuses, I always want to go back to the actual cases, because very often the really powerful cases do something that the people who build matrices of features hadn't really thought of. And the example that I always take is, did Steve Jobs ever use a metric or a matrix of features to design anything? And my feeling is that that he would never have designed the Macintosh if he had looked at a case, a matrix of all of the existing software up to that date. He would have never designed the iPad if he had had a matrix of all these things. My feeling is that he looked at cases and he got a bright idea, and that's really where the bright ideas come from. And are we, and this thing of getting so abstract where all we look at is features and metrics and all that, I don't mind a little bit of that, but what really is exciting, what really is the thing that sells ontology, are the case studies where it really works. And the summaries of metrics and all that, I don't really believe them in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's it's a valid point, although you must admit, I think, John, that many decisions are made based on those metrics, whether they should be or not. Sometimes we are forced to speak to those to satisfy the people who have the money to fund things.
Right. Well, so you want to have some metric. You do want to have some metric somewhere, but my attitude is the people who make decisions based on metrics are people who are doing the CYA rather than the people who really come up with the Steve Jobs kinds of breakthroughs.
Okay. Was that Mike Bennett trying to answer as well, or?
No, that was me, Steve. Rex.
Oh. Rex, okay. Well, you got your hand up anyway, so go for it.
Okay. Well, my response to that was that, you know, I think that, again, we need to make sure we're on the same page when we're talking about either whether, you know, whether we're making the case for ontology to, you know, management to buy a product or to invest in or software management to invest in developing a product, and whether we're trying to stimulate creativity. That's a different kettle of fish to a certain extent. But one of the things that I wanted to go back to was early on in the discussion, I forget which mic it was right now, but mentioned decision support and using inferencing for, or using automated inferencing, using ontology for automated inferencing. And my, you know, my response to that one was, and this also goes into what's you know, measurable where, because if you use, because the way I think of decision support is you know, and you might use automated inferencing for marshaling your information, but if making a decision, you may also have something that says, here are the things that you have to look at before you make a decision if you're in a situation where you need to do that, such as a government position, or say for acquisitions in a particular context. But you know, you're not going to have a way to measure the inferencing that you did to marshal the, you know, data that you then use for your decision support. So by the time you get to the decision support and then measuring whether it was right or wrong or how successful it was, you know, you're not anywhere close to measuring what happened, what could be attributed to the input or the value of an ontology.
Mm-hmm.
How do we measure that?
Good point.
Yeah.
I think there are always going to be things that can't be explicitly measured in numbers, and
yeah, so
whether you make more or less decisions.
Mm. Yeah. We need to be as specific and careful as we can. And the whole purpose of putting together a matrix is to be able to look at the different results, see what worked. It may not be a guide to making a decision, but it at least gives you some ideas.
Okay, and there's some interesting comments coming on the chat as well. But Fabian, you have your hand up.
I wanted to respond to John's point. I think we need to distinguish about what do we do with these systematizations. It's not, I mean, we could just have a bag of use cases, and I agree with them that probably use cases are and examples are the things which you want to draw on when you try to convince somebody that ontology is useful. But, I mean, just let's assume we have now a bag of 100 use cases, at least for us as the ontology community, it would be nice to have at least some systematic way of thinking about these use cases and classifying them. And in particular, if you're looking for, if you have an idea and you want to find out whether there's a use case of this in our collection already, you just want to have some form of categorization, not just go through all of them. So I think even though it might be not the main purpose of having a classification to use it in a sales pitch, it's still very valuable for us to, as the community, to have some form of overview and systematic thinking about what are the kinds of things we do, and that needs to be more than just a bag of use cases.
Okay. Peter, you have a comment.
Also, sort of continuing on John's point, I think he has a point, and it comes back to the question of who are we trying to address. Last week we had the people from Siri telling us, I mean, the process, they sold the company to Apple. Obviously, they have had their chance to present their case, both at the level of Steve Jobs as well as at the level of, let's say, the software engineering director or vice president of engineering. And I'm almost certain the pitch will be different because these people are looking for different things to make their decisions on. Just like if one had to, even for funding, I mean, one has to make a case so that we, for example, move the national research agenda, or in the case of the European Commission, to really invest into, for example, semantic technology for information society versus if you're trying to make the case to a venture capitalist to put the first couple of $1 million into your venture. I think the pitch are very different. So this morning, Matthew and I made sure we posted that breakdown of the audience, which we presented at last week's session. So that's one more dimension that we really have to address as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Good point. All right, well, let's give John a chance to respond now to all these retaliations. Go ahead, John.
Okay. I certainly agree that you need different presentations to different audiences and that different people will respond differently to different things. However, what I would say is that everybody from a kindergarten up to a PhD would respond better to a concrete example than to an abstract table with a lot of words in it. Now, it is true that you need some sort of matrix and table and statistics to summarize the things, but the meaning is not in that table. It's in that actual concrete case where you show here, you might have analyzed 5,000 cases, and you don't want to go through every case, but you might say, here are five cases that really characterize the range of things, and case one has these features, case two has these features, three, four, and five, so that the interest, the thing that emotionally grabs them, and PhDs are every bit as emotional as a kindergarten kid, they need to see right at the level, what does it really mean? And then you can take and map it to a matrix that say, okay, now here's what I meant by this feature, that feature, as illustrated by the basic, five sample cases. Then in my matrix, I then summarize all 5,000 of them. There were 269 here and 73 here and 6 over there. And here's the relationship to the return on investment and the value to whatchamacallit. So you need to have a balance between the emotion-grabbing examples versus the dry as bare as bones little matrix. Because the thing is that too often I've seen cases where people put up these matrices and the columns in those matrices are really very badly chosen, and I would question what those matrices matrix columns really mean in terms of the actual cases. And you really have to justify, you need both. You need examples, concrete, real, live, living, breathing, emotional examples, and dry as dust data. So that's my basic point.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would disagree with you there, that there's place for both of those. And I agree, it's certainly more enjoyable to watch the examples. But the bean counters, and in a positive sense, bean counters, have to think about things like what's it going to cost and how much is it going to save us and things like that. So.
And by all means, the bean counters who see an example of a real flashy iPod followed by the fact that the Apple stock rose by 100% after the thing came out, that is what's going to grab them. They see the concrete example followed immediately by the ROI on it, and they say, wow. And that's the thing that you need. You need both.
That's true, but I mean,
need examples as much as anybody else.
That's, I would agree. I actually don't want to jump in here myself too much, but I can think of other examples of things which are very, you know, putting a man on Mars may not be the smartest thing for us to do, and it was very exciting, but when you start looking at the cost figures for that, you know, that was kind of daunting. But
Sure. I think by all means, you need those the data. And people actually, I'm not complaining about numbers like real data, like dollar sign. However, when I hear something like a measurement of some sort of very abstract thing like robustness, I never believe a robustness measure.
I do believe
a defect number. But I don't believe a robustness measure.
All right, and that does bring up a general problem we're struggling with here, I think, is which of these measures can and cannot be quantified, and in a substantive sense, not in a pick a number out of the air sense. I think that's valid. Michael, you have your hand up.
I just wanted to reiterate a point I put into the chat room, is that if there was one single killer app WhizBang case study for the use of ontologies, obviously we'd use that. But the problem is that there are many, many different applications. One of the points of the framework is to try to, at some granularity, identify what are the different categories. So at that point, then we can try to find in a particular category what is the killer app use case that would convince people. But we also kind of need to get that sort of coverage. And Mike Bennett's done a great job of gathering people to real use cases that do capture that breadth. I think that's kind of where we're looking for. I disagree with John that, you know, you're going to find that one, whiz bang case study that's going to convince people or convince everyone. But every intended audience is going to have a different whiz bang use case for convincing them.
Good point. Mike Bennett, comments?
Yeah, just a quick comment on that. If there was one whiz bang application that made everybody go out and, invest in it, then all the other very different things that semantics can also be used for and that benefit from the use of ontologies would get drowned out in the noise.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't asking for one. I was asking for five that span the whole range.
Good. Yes. Agreed.
Okay. I'm cognizant of Mike Ushold's comment on the chat where he's wondering whether we're getting off track or not. I think probably this is useful to keep us grounded. It is true we are getting broader in our conversation than just how we are integrating the framework, the value metrics, and the cases. But those are being integrated for the purpose of trying to make a case. So I'm certainly willing to entertain this to go on a little further. And we got Ken Buklowski, who hasn't welcome back, Ken. Haven't heard from you lately.
Hi. Yes, well... Sorry, I'm a little late. I was just during an NIH panel, and one of the issues that came up was semantic web and ontologies. Obviously, I can't tell you exactly what went on at the panel because it's all confidential, but I can give you a few sort of general, you know, observations. One of them is that you really cannot expect something like ontologies or the semantic web to sell a proposal all by itself. It has to be just one ingredient, it has to be just one aspect of it. And another thing is that it's really, really important to address the problem rather than just talk about the technology. I think in ontology is more than almost anything else. The problem is what matters. Nobody's going to be thrilled by just creating a new technology without having a real close connection to the problems that are seen in the field. I think those two should sort of frame some of the debate that you're having right now. So I honestly don't think you're going to find one, killer app, and even if you did, I don't think it'll be very helpful for all the other apps, all the other possible applications that are out there.
Yeah. And I do think that actually on some of the earlier calls as well, we've kind of agreed, rallied around certain points, such as the fact that we can't really just pitch ontology in the abstract, that there are such pitches have to be made in the context of concrete problems, concrete solutions being put forward to those problems, and ontology is a tool in that sense to help us achieve that solution perhaps more flexibly or more quickly in terms of development time, things like that. So I think you're in a similar thinking crowd in that sense.
And one area that I saw being very important is the issue of interoperability. That's
mm-hmm.
a very important area. People don't really seem to know how to solve this problem.
You're here.
Attempts to solve it haven't been very successful. I mean, this is a real opportunity, not just, in general, the idea of interoperability, and I'm distinguishing that from something like search. You know, there's a lot of, hype surrounding, better search. That doesn't necessarily have any, real benefit when it comes to interoperability of different data sources.
Well, as someone who's dedicated the better part of his career to interoperability, I would have to agree with you on that one. Let's see. Michael Grunninger, comment.
One of the things that came up in our earlier kind of meeting with Rex was we kind of recognized that the framework, again, was coming from more of a technical perspective, and one of the things that was missing was this notion of intended audience. So the question being, if Summit is about making the case, I thought one of the things we would need to talk about today was how can we use the framework to make the case, or alternatively, what's missing from the framework that would not allow us to make the case, particularly with respect to the intended audience. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Rex, do you have any kind of comments on that?
I think that, one of the things that we have to do is examine who we're talking to, because a lot of times when we're making a case for something, and not just ontology, we're just saying our own favorite, things about it, why it's important to us, or why we hate it, why it's just absolutely the most stupid thing that ever happened. What we're not doing is asking ourselves, who are we actually talking to? And that's a lot more difficult. And so that's why I included that in the matrix. And also, how do you, it's not just, who are you talking to, but how do you reach them? I mean, do they read white papers? Are they willing to come to a meeting? What, how do you get to them? Do you take out an ad in the Wall Street Journal? It's something you need to pay attention to, because if you don't connect your argument to the correct target audience, even if you make a brilliant argument, what? So what?
Mm-hmm. No, that's true.
So we need to do that.
Okay. Mike Bennett.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up on the interoperability point, and I think that's a good example of the interoperability is a business description of a business problem, and the solution to that very often, or part of that solution, is a business conceptual model, either across one organization or even across an industry. And the classic example is the financial industry, where for years people have been talking about the interoperability problem and applying various technical solutions that haven't quite delivered, because what they needed but didn't know they needed was semantics. And after 8 or 10 years, people actually started using the word semantics quite explicitly, even without any knowledge of semantic technology and ontologies and so on. So I think that's a good example of, you know, we shouldn't try and explain to business people a term like conceptual model. Even technical people don't agree on what that means. But that's really the kind of solution which addresses that kind of business problem.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And by the way, that does remind me, if this is a little bit of an advertising in the sense that if anyone wants to roll up their sleeves and tackle a huge problem that is occupying a lot of effort in this country, the U.S., and that's the smart grid architecture and the interoperability of the smart electrical grid, for which indeed many of us are working on conceptual models, and a small number of us are actually advocating the use of ontology, although it's a minority, I will say. So if anyone wants to join in on that fray, let me know. I'm happy to help direct you where the audience needs to hear this.
We could share experience on our industry's experience on that, maybe.
Ah, okay. Well, I'll get off my soapbox now, but let's see. No one else is raising their hands, but could it be that, I mean, it seems to me the next steps on this now, we've gotten these three tracks starting to cross-link, really just the beginnings of that. I would think that at this point, all of us could be providing suggestions of examples of either the use cases, you know, where they link better, or where there could be better cross-links between the architecture framework, application framework, rather, and the metrics. So I think the skeleton is in place, and now we need to flesh it out a little bit. And but that's easier in some ways now that we've got this framework in place. So I don't expect that the co-organizers of each of the tracks need to do all the heavy lifting here. I would appeal to the broader audience of participants in suggesting, putting material in. We have these community input pages, which are for just that purpose. So don't feel constrained. You can go ahead and put things in on those wiki pages, the community input pages. Leave the synthesis pages to the track organizers, but we can really start building something as a community pretty nice and complete if we take advantage of that. Rather than just email, actually start co-building some of these connections and points to be made. All right, let's see. I'm going to pause here to see the chat. I was going to try and follow John Soa's link, but does anyone else have any comments to make?
Well, I followed your link, and if we wanted to go through that, that'd be fine.
Let's see. I haven't followed it yet. And, of course, there's no requirement for us to go the full 2 hours either. If people are talked out, I think this has been a very productive session, and we have, I think, a good way forward in terms of what needs to happen next.
Yeah,
and
I can make a pitch for one of the things that we need, which is people to not only give us examples of measurements and measuring systems and measurements and how you do, especially if you're going to do qualitative measures and you're going to do surveys, we need any help we can get there because, you know, for my 2 cents, most of those are totally worthless. So any way that we can do something that makes sense. But I'm also looking for people to look at the benefit as well and see if there's some way to quantify it, you know, that we haven't thought of yet.
And in fact, I think that goes hand in hand with the fact that we're having a hard time finding real use cases that have a good set of quantified benefit metrics. And part of that is very likely that some companies aren't particularly willing to share all that stuff out in the open. But that is probably our biggest challenge, is getting some of those compelling examples out there in a form that are compelling specifically because they have quantified benefits or metrics ready to be reviewed.
Okay. And we could encourage those who submitted case studies, now that we have a framework from Track 3 on metrics, and now that we've put up the very basic sort of
bullet summary of the case studies, we could encourage those who submitted case studies to go into that page and add benefits in that more sort of rigorous way, and you know, chop away at the stuff that's in there at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a wiki with rollback capabilities, so people could go ahead and make some communal edits to things with care. I would say not so much on the synthesis pages, but on the community input pages. And then that will accelerate the productivity of all of us, I'd say.
Yes.
I would also like to remind you all that we are, this discussion of killer apps and stuff reminds me of the fact that next week's session is going to be a Grand Challenges session where Ram Sriram and Ernie Lucier are going to lead us in a number of presentations of various thinkers who believe what some of those grand challenges might be. So in the sense that some of those might end up with a killer app, although sometimes killer apps show up in unexpected places, you all might want to think about what you think are good candidates for grand challenges. And there might even be some opportunity to speak to those at next week's session as they continue to collect the speakers. So, okay, I'm sort of sensing that we are arriving at a point of consensus here, and we don't need to thrash these ideas to death. I'd rather end a little earlier if instead of that. So, does anyone have one last chance? They want to make any comments by raising their hand? Otherwise, I'm going to probably draw this session to a close. Penn, your hand is up.
Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, Mark made an interesting point about, you know, people want prefer to use other solutions because ontologies are viewed as being more complex and these other solutions are easier and less complex. Are we really more complex? I mean, maybe you could make the pitch that actually this is a simplification of, you know, the solution, particularly in the case of interoperability. Ad hoc solutions to interoperability are very complex ways of dealing with the problem.
That's true.
So we should kind of address this issue of the perception by people that, you know, this is somehow deep and difficult and complex. Is it really?
Yeah, how much of that is perception, how much of that is true? I think people think ontologies are difficult and complex, and therefore they won't investigate.
Right. Okay, Nicola, you have your hand up. Can't hear you, though. Did you try the star 3? I'm afraid I know you lost the line there earlier and had to dial back in, but we're still not hearing you. Well, I did see you've been typing some things at the bottom, so if you can't get through, I guess we'll have to make do with the text for the time being. But with that, I guess in the absence of anyone else wanting to make any final points, I would like to especially thank the three track co-organizers who presented today, because I think this is a very distinct step forward in, I think, our achieving the aims of this year's summit. So thank you for that. I really appreciate that. It certainly helps. And just get ready for both participating online. Remember, we do things in between these Thursday sessions as well. Jump into those wikis, wail away on email, but also contribute material you think is relevant to it would be very helpful. And other than that, we will see you all next Thursday at the Grand Challenges session. Thanks to the U.S. government for staying open for this so that Ram Sriram and Ernie Lucier can both co-chair it. Okay, that's it for today then. Thank you all very much.